lights to show you.
So welcome to the 14th episode of the Sirens of Scream, the geek podcast that proves sometimes dead is better. I'm Melissa Megan, and I'm here tonight with Jackie DeVore.
Hello.
And Sierra Houck.
Hello.
And today we are joined by two special guests, our friends Sean French and Mortimer Glum, creators of the comic series Escape from Jesus Island.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, guys.
How's it going?
We are
great. Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
We have, like, so much to talk about, I think, with you guys.
Excellent.
Reading and rereading, and we have questions. We have questions about this stuff that you guys make.
Fantastic.
So first things first, we actually like to jump right in when we have guests and do something called Grill the Guests, where we ask you guys some on-the-spot fun questions. Okay?
All right.
Which have nothing to do with anything that you have created or done, so
okay. It's excellent.
Totally fun. So the first question is, if you were in a slasher film, which character would you want to be, and which character would you realistically end up being?
Okay, so I don't want to be in the movie Feast. That doesn't end well for anyone. Pretty bad. Let's see. I have to work usually by process of elimination. Well, let's look at body count. Which of the horror movie slashers has one of the higher body counts? Let's put that out there. Because you have to immediately take away Michael Myers. It's not enough. Freddy's killed a lot of people and seems to have a pretty good sense of humor and is on probably psychotropic drugs. So that's a win. Hard to think of. Oh, gosh. There's Madman Mars. He's kind of I'm assuming he got away. Because that was back in the 70s. And no one's heard of that movie. Like that. I like Obscure. Obscure is good. So let's go with Madman Mars.
Okay. You're the first person who's ever interpreted this question as which slasher film would you be in? That was really fun.
I wanted to actually be the killer.
Okay, so you want to choose which killer you want to be.
Right.
So
I think you're actually the first person to interpret it as which specific established character
right.
would you be rather than which trope.
Right.
Oh, God.
Right.
Which is fun, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to kill Definitely. Teenagers because you can feel pretty good about that.
Fair enough.
Because they're annoying.
So if you were realistically dropped into a slasher film, do you think you would actually end up being the killer?
I'm going to let you answer that, because if I answer that, I'm going to end up going to jail, probably.
Sounds delicious.
This is like one of those Chris Hansen questions, like, can you please take a
seat? Just have a seat.
Sean, what about you?
I would want to be the killer because I play movie monsters. That's the most fun thing to be. I've played most of the classic archetypes at this point, from serial killers to demons to zombies. In reality, I would probably be the geeky guy who gets killed early.
No way we can relate to that.
Yeah,
no,
not at all. But it's fun to play killer.
Our second question is, have you ever had what you believe to be a supernatural encounter?
Y'all seen some ghosts?
I have not seen any ghosts. I've met many crazy kooky people that say that they have. Most of my surreal encounters in life that have been horror movie related have been with real living people. It can be pretty terrible.
Have you ever had any mutant encounters?
Yes.
Most conventions.
Every convention we do.
Sean, do you have anything to share?
What was the question again? One more time.
Have you ever had what you believe to be a supernatural encounter?
Oh no. I would love for any of that sort of stuff to be true. It would make the universe a more interesting place, but I don't buy any of it. I'm rooting for it. I hope.
I think we're all kind of in that camp.
But I
just, yeah.
Well, I want it to be real so bad.
Yeah.
Still searching. Still believing.
I'll be happy if I'm wrong, but. I don't really buy any of it.
So our last question is, we want to know what you guys were for Halloween last year, or this year, since Halloween just went by.
Okay, well, last year I went as a murderous, lecherous clown. This year I went, what the hell did I go this year? I have to actually, hold on a second, I gotta yell in the other room. Michelle, what was I for Halloween? What was it? Quickly, time is of the essence.
You were the skull mask.
Oh yeah. Okay, thank you. I was Baron Samedi.
Baron Samedi.
Voodoo King. Nice.
Sorry.
You didn't think the clown maybe was not the best idea this year?
No, because I'm kind of
probably
scared.
Not.
A clown, so I don't even want to look at the damn thing, to be honest with you.
Sean, what were you for Halloween?
I actually didn't this past year, but the last time we dressed up and went out, I was a zombie Jesus complete with crucifixion nails. And my wife was a demonic nun.
Nice.
Yeah, we actually went to a Halloween party at a friend's house, got there a little early, and there was only one guest there who we later found out was his pastor. We didn't know that at the time.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, that wasn't awkward at all.
So you just went to the party with it, though? You didn't, like, take it to the streets?
No, not that time. No.
So the next thing we like to do is we're going to jump right into a segment called What We're Loving Now, and that's where we like to just share some fun recommendations of things that we're enjoying and loving. I don't know if you guys brought some recommendations for this. You don't have to have any, for sure. If you have some, we'd love you to share. I think I will start with Sierra today. You're up.
Yeah. Okay, so I only have one recommendation this week. It's a podcast called The Message. It originally only had one season, and I thought it was done and over with, but they just started a new season, and it's a whole new story, and I'm really excited about it. It's kind of like Serial and those style of podcasts where it's like fake reporting, but it's, you know, made to look kind of real. And this new season is about this guy who his partner died. As he's mourning, he's like going through her social media profiles, and there's this made up social media network that's like, instead of posting statuses, you record voice memos. So he goes through these voice memos like constantly over and over again, just listening to her voice. And then at the very end of the episode, maybe a little spoilery, he comes across a message that he hasn't heard before, and it's new, and it's her talking to him from beyond, it seems. And it's creepy and cool, and I'm excited to listen to more of it.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and the first season is also really good. It's about this transmission that comes in from outer space, and they it's this team of people who are brought together to try to translate it and figure out what it's saying, but they realize that the sound is a carrier for, like, a disease or something. So all of these people are getting infected from listening to it. So they're trying to crack the code by listening to it without getting sick. And there's all this, like, quarantining and all of that stuff, all that kind of stuff. So both seasons are kind of related in that it's about sounds. And so it's kind of playing with the podcasting format too, which is cool.
Sierra, you've been bringing tons of podcasts to the show. I don't know how you have time. You have a commute, right? That's what it is.
I have a commute, and I just listen to podcasts while I work.
I have
a job that lets me just listen to stuff, yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I've been wondering that too. Like, how do you have that much time to listen to that many podcasts, honestly?
Yeah, you've been recommending a lot of podcasts, which is really fun. Sean, what do you have going on right now that you want to share with us?
There's a comic I really liked that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. It was called Malevolence, and they put out a first issue. The first issue was called Click Click, and it's a black and white kind of horror comic that has the vibe of, like, the old radio horror serial stories in, like, the best possible way. Really creepy and effective and kind of sparse in terms of the wording used and letting the artwork do a lot of it, but it's a really good story. Tom Burgess put it out, and I'm curious what he's going to do with the rest of the series. There's only one out so far, but I thought it was one of the more effective first issues I've seen. I think each is going to be kind of a standalone story.
Do you know who this is published by?
I think he's doing it on his own still. I'm pretty sure his site is malevolence.com, and I think you can get him digitally. He's in the UK. But really, really good comic. I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, there we go. I found it. Yeah, I like the artwork. Very, like, shadowy.
He did a promo video, too, that he got with, like, live actors. That's really, really nice. I'm not sure if he has that up on his site or not, but I think he's building a really interesting IP around this, around the comic.
Very cool. Check that out.
Yeah. Good guy, too. I just talked to him on Facebook, but he's super nice.
Do you have anything else?
Another one I really enjoyed was the first issue of Oathbound, which is one I backed on Kickstarter. And it's kind of an old school Western, but like with goblins and elves. So it's kind of a genre mashup that I thought worked really well. It kind of follows the story of a gunslinger and his half-elven daughter, and kind of plays with... it seems like the genres just play really well together in a way that kind of caught me off guard and made me wonder why I haven't seen it done before. And that one's oathboundcomic.com is where you can get that.
That's a strange kind of quirky thing to put together.
Yeah, it's neat. And actually our editor on Escape from Jesus Island edited that one as well. And that's one that was already in development when he kind of found it and fell in love with it. And I sort of found it through him, but it's a really, really good first issue. And I think that's on sale on their site now too.
Nice. I lose my stuff. I'm going to share mine really quick, just because mine are pretty quick. I just got a PlayStation Pro, so I've been trying to find some new games to play on there. And I'm going to recommend Dishonored 2, which is one that just came out. I did not play Dishonored 1. Let me just say that up front.
I played Dishonored 1. I'm actually really excited to hear your thoughts on 2 here.
Okay, so I had no idea what to expect. I just, I'm a big fan of Assassin's Creed, so when I heard that it was sort of a sneaky, you know...
Stealth
game, yeah, then I was interested in it. And then there's robots and weird sort of clone things or something. I don't know. I haven't quite figured out the whole story yet, but
there's supernatural powers.
Supernatural powers, robotics, all kinds of cool stuff. But I will say that the game looks gorgeous. I really love the graphics of it so far. I haven't gotten really far into it. I just had it started playing it like last week. But I found the mechanics a little bit tricky at first. I don't, maybe it's because I didn't play Dishonored 1. Maybe there's something that carries over that you would know how to do that better. But I found myself sort of stuck on the tutorial for a while. Like, really? I can't beat the tutorial. This is not a good sign.
Doesn't bode well.
Yeah, no, it's just the stealth aspect was a little tricky to get the hang of at first. But once I got through that, it's just kind of catapulted into this really interesting, cool story of like, it throws you right into this opening cutscene of a princess whose father was a well-known assassin, and she's taken over the kingdom, I guess you would call it, the place that her mother used to rule. And it's the day that they're celebrating her mother's death because there was this really highly respected woman, and there's basically a coup that happens from inside of the royal home, and shit gets crazy really fast. Like, people are just getting slashed and stabbed, and she gets like beat up and thrown into a room, and just whoa, like everything just kind of goes crazy. And the first thing that you're asked to do is basically to escape from your own room while this coup is happening outside of your locked bedroom. And it's just, yeah, it's really cool story, and I think the game looks gorgeous. And I think once I get used to more comfortable with the mechanics of it, then I really love it. It's Bethesda, and they build a pretty huge, like, really well-written story normally for everything. You know, I feel like their stories are always really well thought out, so I have faith in that. And if I can get used to the mechanics in Assassin's Creed, then I can get used to this one.
Are you playing as Emily or Corvo?
I'm playing as Emily.
Yeah.
And okay. I had no idea, you know, when that choice is given to you right at the beginning of the game, I didn't expect it. I didn't know that was coming. So I just kind of thought like, oh, do I decide just like whose point of view I want to see for a moment? And then once I chose it, I realized, nope, that's it. You're her now. Okay.
Whoops.
Yeah.
So to give you a little bit of backstory, a little back perspective on the first one. The first one, Corvo is basically a protector to the Empress there, and a whole group comes in and assassinates the Empress and then pins it on Corvo. And Emily is being held hostage. Corvo has to go around and set her free and return everything back to normal and get the kingdom back under control, basically. But what was really cool about the first one, I thought... it did have multiple endings, but the one I saw, Emily, even though she was a small girl, turned out to be a total badass. Like, she had the option to just kind of be like, yeah, okay, this is just how things are. Instead, she's like, no, things are going to change. Now this is my throne and you're going to listen to me. So that was kind of cool.
My second recommendation is another game that I just picked up that's free on Xbox right now, and that's why I picked it up, because otherwise I probably would have ignored it. but it's a bit of an older game. It's called Murdered Soul Suspect. It's from 2014, and it's a third-person like detective adventure story. What makes it really interesting is you actually are playing the part of the detective's name is Ronan, and you're playing as him, but you're his ghost.
What?
The game starts out immediately just killing him. He gets killed by the bad guy that he's trying to catch by this murder.
That sounds like a bad day.
Yeah,
it sounds like he's not a very good detective.
Well, I guess that depends on how you play the game, because now that's your job, so
yeah.
But yeah, he's hunting this serial killer, and he gets killed by the killer right off the bat. So you play as his ghost, and you are kind of stuck. You can't move on until you solve the murder and figure out who killed you. And so you start to figure out what things you can walk through and what things you can't. There's demons roaming around that want to eat your soul, so like you'll occasionally run into a demon who you have to hide in like little, I don't know what they call them, like little ghost patches from the demons and try to get behind the demon to kill it.
Ghost patches.
They're kind of like little like clouds of like people who used to be there, I guess, but they're not really spirits anymore. And somehow you can hide in them and the demon can't see you. Unless they catch you actually that running into sense. It, and then the demon just comes in front of you and he just kind of and freaks out on you. But the demons are pretty terrifying. And as you roam around, you're also running into like other ghosts who are kind of lingering in their spaces for various reasons. So you can have conversations with different ghosts, and it's pretty interesting. The mechanics are really simplistic, you know, like you approach something, it says push X and do that. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. You just follow the directions and do it. But it's really interesting so far, because it doesn't seem like too easy. I was afraid it was going to be one of those games that just walks you through everything so much, though, that it's not interesting. But I haven't like found all the clues really easily. So far I'm stuck in this one apartment building where I have to get between four floors to collect clues and talk to people who live there and talk to spirits, and I keep running into demons, and I'm not very good at getting away from them. I just kind of like run into walls and but no, it's really cool. And just a little example, like I've met one ghost. There was a woman in an apartment building, and you can possess people too. So once you possess a person, you can eavesdrop on their conversation to hear what they're saying to somebody, or you can listen to their thoughts, or you can also influence them to say certain things or do certain things. So this is how you kind of move your detection thing along. You move your investigation along is by manipulating people and hearing what they're thinking and finding out their secrets. Yeah, it's really cool. And I walked into an apartment, and there was a woman at the window, and she was complaining. I listened to her thoughts, and she was complaining about not getting any sleep. I was like, oh, she must be a mom. She's definitely a mom. And I was right. She was. There was like a little girl in the bedroom who kept screaming. She was laying in the bed screaming. And there was a ghost in her closet, this dude standing in the closet. And you go and talk to him, and he's like, yeah, well, you know, I was supposed to come and kidnap her, but she screwed everything up and I got killed, so I'm just going to torment this little girl forever.
Aww. <It's>
like, like, there's That's nothing weird. You could do about it. The guy's like, yeah, I got time. I'm just going to stand here. Like, I'm hoping it gives me an opportunity at some point to get that guy out of her closet, because I just feel terrible now, but...
That's hilarious revenge, though.
Yeah, he just like stands there, and you keep asking him like, "Why?" He's like, "I got time. I'm just gonna stand here." So yeah, Murdered Soul Suspect is my other recommendation. Morty, do you have recommendations for us?
Sure, I have a few. If we're talking video games, my highest suggestion since the Demon Souls days would be to pick up the DLC for Dark Souls 3. Hmm. Which is a lot of fun. If you're not familiar with the Dark Souls series, it's sort of third-person view-ish. It's highly brutal. The game trains you to become better by killing you repeatedly. It has some of the hardest bosses that you would fight in most of the, you know, games these days. And it's a dark gothic fantasy background, sort of set against a sort of a Japanese view on medieval history. So there's a lot of Japanese tropes about self-effacing misery and torture. It's really sad and at the same time extremely difficult. It'll make you jump out of your skin a few times by the way that the monsters will attack. You have, the controls are great, except for jumping. Jumping sucks, but the combat allows you to use shield and so forth. And I don't know, I just think it's phenomenal.
You're not selling me on this game. It's really difficult.
it's difficult, it's miserable. It'll make you hate playing video games, but it's addictive. Because each time you actually do progress and beat a boss, it feels better. If you remember, like, early Final Fantasy, how tough some of those bosses were, you know, when you actually beat one, it felt really good, but it was frustrating. So it's one of those types of games.
That's how I feel about the Hotline Miami games. Like, I'll be playing that in the middle of the night, and my husband will literally text me saying, can you please stop yelling fuck in the middle of the night? Like, there's so many of them.
For books, I would suggest... what is it? Smoke in the Eyes. It gets Smoke in the Eyes. Tales from the Crematorium. It's been out for a while. I think it's Caitlin Doughty.
I want to read that.
That is such a good book. It's on Amazon now. I can basically give you a quick synopsis. It's basically, and I remember this from a while back. Yeah, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes by Other Lessons from the Crematorium. It basically, she went, and this is her real story. She had taken a job in a crematorium and, of course, talked to other morticians as well and workers within a crematorium. And it's a really interesting look on the business of death, their stories, the strange things that happen like in real time with bodies. It's very humorous. It's very dark humor. I'd highly recommend it. It's a fantastic book.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I definitely think it should be picked up on Amazon. And for comic books, Hillbilly. I love Hillbilly. That's by Eric Powell. And it's kind of this, it's kind of has this artwork that reminds me of old Creepy. And it's set in the Appalachian Mountains with hillbillies in place of like horror monsters. It's extremely well done. Self-published. I love that comic book. So those are my three recommendations.
I feel like I lived that comic book for most of my 20s.
Oh, I like this artwork a lot.
Oh, it's beautiful, beautiful artwork. I'm jealous. Very, very jealous.
It reminds me a little bit of an artist named Damian Worm. I don't know if you guys have seen his work around. He's done a couple books with Steve Niles. He does October Faction right now. This is a currently running book, but reminds me a little bit of his style. Very Jackie. Cool. What do you have, Jack?
Let me preface this first one by saying I was on a work trip last weekend and I'm sitting in the hotel flipping channels and I find this terribly cheesy ghost show. It's called A Haunting. And it was so bad. The reenactments were amazing. And I just really got sucked in. So naturally, I turn around and I text Sierra because she and I both have this weakness for
terrible ghost shows. Bad ones.
Yeah. So I tell her there's a show right now on TLC, it's called A Haunting, I think she'll like it, and her immediate response was, oh, I'm familiar. So and then she tells me, but have you seen Celebrity Ghost Stories?
That was so bad.
There is literally a show, Celebrity Ghost Stories. I didn't even know about it. It's got 8 seasons here. It's insane.
Oh my god.
But yeah, they're absolutely terrible, just as you would expect. But they're like random celebrities. Most of them are like B-list, even C-list celebrities that you've never even heard of, which kind of makes it better for me. Telling about their own personal experiences with supernatural shit. And the one thing that really gets me about it is I don't know why they're not acting out their own dramatic reenactments. Like they are the talent. Like that's what they do. But no, they bring in some other people to do the dramatic reenactments, but they are dramatic and they're fantastic. So If, like me and Sierra, you have a weakness for terrible, just really goofy ghost story shows, I would highly recommend Celebrity Ghost Stories. I think I've like ripped through all of season one by now, and it's been a week. So that's my first one. The second one is a movie called Lights Out, which I honestly did not have high hopes for when I was going into it, and I've actually heard a lot of mixed reviews about it. Lights Out was based on a little short film of the same name by director and writer David Sandberg. And there's no way you haven't seen the short film that it's based on. Yeah, it's a woman going to bed, and every time she turns off her her light switch, there's a figure in her doorway, and she keeps turning it off, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, and that figure gets closer and closer until she's hiding under her blanket. We've seen a lot of these short movies in recent years, I feel like, that have been turned into big productions and really fall flat. The biggest one that comes to my mind is Mama, which I'm still pissed about. I'm never getting that hour and a half back.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I really, I didn't even try to give Lights Out a fair chance at first. I was very cynical going into it, but I was really surprised. The effects are fantastic. And the way the story is set up, it actually makes a lot of sense in terms of thinking about the original short film. The actress who was in the short film is in this one as well, which is cool. This is produced by James Wan, and instead of directing it himself, he brought on that same director, David Sandberg. So instead of saying, we're going to take your story and make it our own production here, they basically said, what do you want to do with this story?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was
That's
really
awesome.
Cool.
Did you say James Wan?
James Wan produced it.
Oh, Wan. Okay.
But it was directed by the guy who made the short film. So it was fleshed out in a really nice, natural kind of way. What's even better about it is I really get pissed off at the protagonist in horror movies being really stupid. Like, you know he's behind the door. Why are you going in that room? He's right there behind the door. Don't run upstairs. Run outside. What are you doing? But throughout this entire movie, I'm sitting there like, wow, this chick is really smart. I wouldn't even have thought of that. Damn, you go. I'm rooting for you. So this was a really good change of pace for me in terms of those little short films that get turned into productions that I normally get mad at. So this is The Neon Demon, which, again, has a lot of really mixed reviews. But I just watched this last night, and I think where the mixed reviews are coming from is this is a Nicholas Refn movie, and he doesn't really make very coherent stories come to life.
Kind of an important familiar part of a film.
Nah, you don't need stories.
Yeah. Well, his stories are really all over the place, and they're really convoluted, and they deal a lot with symbolism, and he's a very interesting director. I gotta hand him that. But he did Drive and Only God Forgives. And if you're not familiar with his work and you're going into this movie, yeah, you're gonna sit there and think, what the fuck? Because it doesn't... I mean, it's a really strange story, and it's not even, like, that well-developed of a story if you're not taking in all the little cues along the way. But what this movie is an incredible feast for the eyes. I have honestly never seen cinematography this gorgeous in quite a long time. This is just a huge, huge mess of colors and textures, and there is a lot of symbolism in terms of the colors, the shapes, everything in there. So if you're really paying attention to what you're watching, it's a lot better than if you're just trying to say, oh, well, this chick's conceited and she just wants to be a model and blah, blah, blah. No, you watch this girl go from this innocent young girl to this kind of crazy, self-involved woman, and all the girls around her freak out and want to destroy her and then literally eat her for her power. So this is a very interesting movie, but I would not recommend just diving into this thinking you're going to have a happy Saturday afternoon viewing here. It's gorgeous, and it is a lot to look at, but yeah, there's a lot to wrap your brain around in terms of the story here.
I don't mind complex stories, but I have to be in the right mood to watch something that is just going to leave me wondering what the fuck I just watched, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This is definitely one
of those. Most of the time I want to understand some semblance of, like, what was happening in that.
Yeah, they definitely, they don't spell it out in any kind of way. You do have to take a lot of cues from the surroundings and the cinematography and the, and very much the colors. It's, yeah, it's layered.
Yeah, I saw it. I thought it was awesome.
I read a lot of reviews on this before, and a lot of people are like, what's going on here? I don't understand what I just watched. And when I was finished with it, I was like, that was so cool. So I guess to each their own.
It's, you know, and like, I feel like now, I don't want to say nowadays, because I'm going to sound like some kind of old lady who talks about the good old days, but, you know, I feel like trailers are not, just not doing a good job lately of representing films very well. And that trailer, well, every time really. I saw it, it was just kind of like, it's like a long perfume commercial or something, like lots of lights and supermodel looking people, and you know,
it's totally
no real totally like vision of what to expect in this film. I like Drive, but I think I may have, I don't know, you know, I think the actor has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, well, he was phenomenal in that. Yeah. A fun little side note about Drive, I knew nothing about that movie when I went to see it, and I went to see it with my now mother-in-law the second time I ever met her. Like, we had to figure out something to do for the afternoon. And I'm like, you want to go see this movie? I heard it's good. We're like sitting there watching all these like topless strippers stand around while he's hammering somebody with a fucking hammer there. And I look over at her and she's just like cringing. I'm like, shit.
Oh, no. This
is not smart.
You made a good first impression.
Yeah.
So we're going to take just a really quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to dig into some talk of mutants and game and comic book development with Sean and Mortimer. Reach out, touch faith. I guess we'll start out with what I think is the most important thing to talk about with Sean and Mortimer today, and that is the big Kickstarter campaign that is happening right now that we really want to try to help you guys push along here, because I think it is going to be really amazing, and I really want to have this in trade paperback on my shelf, so I'm hoping it gets made.
Yes, not only that, but the rewards you guys have posted on there look incredible. They really do.
Thank you.
Yeah, how's the Kickstarter going, guys? How's it been?
Well, the election kind of hit us a little bit. It's starting to slow down, but it's starting to pick back up, thankfully.
You started out with a Kickstarter for Escape from Jesus Island, didn't you?
Yeah.
Originally.
Yeah, that's how we launched the first, we originally raised enough to print the first three issues, and that initial money will really get us to probably six or seven now, and we're trying to raise enough to print our first trade, which we can put in the Diamond catalog, so every store can just get us where they get everything else. Right now, any store that carries us, I deal with the owner of that store one-on-one, every single time. I'm handling every comic that goes out the door, and that's obviously a huge time sink. Getting us in Diamond is a big piece of the puzzle for us.
That sounds like a huge amount of work. How do you manage to get it out then? Like, I think you're in Maine, right?
Yeah.
How do you manage to get it outside of Maine if you have to personally deal with every comic book owner?
Our fans have been really good. Going in and requesting it at their local shop, and then I'll follow up after that. We've managed to build up a network of, I think we're up to 100 stores in three countries.
Nice.
Wow. But it's just awesome. A crazy amount of work, and there are a lot of chains, obviously, that won't deal with a publisher one-on-one. If you're not in Diamond, yeah, that's the end of the conversation.
That's frustrating.
Yeah. So that's the next big leap for us.
Let's just focus on Escape from Jesus Island for a bit. Because the story is fucking crazy and insane. And I really want to talk about it. This is a really, really unique story.
That it is.
It's a little bit of a cliche question, but I just have to ask this. What kind of inspired you to play with this concept of returning Jesus to Earth in mutant form?
it was really a couple different things, a couple different things that happened at the same time in 93, which is when I originally came up with the story and knocked out the whole thing in my car, the first draft of it, in one continuous burst. And it was after seeing the first Jurassic Park film and hearing a story on the radio that someone had claimed they'd found the Shroud of Turin.
Oh, okay.
My brain immediately put those together, and I pictured this island, you know, where they try and bring back Jesus, and one stormy night, all the mutant Jesus clones get loose, walk right across the moat.
Wow, you know, interesting.
And wreak havoc. And I was a stand-up comic at the time, and I did a joke about it that was actually on Comedy Central back in the long ago time. And it stayed in my act for about a year, and then I dropped it. But I realized there was a story there. Like, there was something, it just stayed with me. So I kept kind of chipping away at it. And knowing I had to tell the story at some point. And then it was 5 or 6 years ago when we first discussed it, Marty?
No, it was 2012. And then we launched in 2013, January. I had met you a while ago when you were still working on The Wrong House.
Right. Morty did the cover art for a horror film I made called The Wrong House. And that's when we got talking about Jesus Island, which I was hoping to find a way to film as an independent film and kind of shrink the story down enough that I could make it work. And we got talking, and he kind of fell in love with the story, and we realized that as a comic, we can go as big and bad as we want. Yep. Not have to worry about budget constraints, and we can have exploding helicopters and swarms of mutants and whatever locations mm-hmm. we want.
That's a good way to look at it.
And it's just been full speed ahead ever since.
I just really love that inspiration story. I never in a million years would have thought you'd say it's mutant Jurassic Park. That's amazing. Just because you just mentioned another kind of thing that you've done, Sean, I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm pretty sure that I saw a clip somewhere of you doing some stunt work.
Yeah.
For films.
That
so are you still throwing yourself down hills for the camera?
Not as much since breaking my back 3 years ago.
Oh.
That was pretty much the end of that.
I
was playing the title monster in a film called Amish Devil, which still isn't out, which is obviously great to break your back on a film that never gets released. and we were doing a fight scene there, and it was just a fluke and a weird fall. So I haven't done any monster work since then, but generally I play monsters and do stunt work in films and that kind of stuff. I think my first role back is going to be this summer as a werewolf. I won't be doing any crazy fight stuff, but I get to play a wolf designed by Tom Devlin, who's an effects artist who's doing the Puppet Master remake, mm-hmm. or the newest cool. one.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom's a great guy, so being able to play one of his monsters would be a lot of fun.
That sounds so cool.
I think you should go into more like supernatural monsters because they don't seem to have a lot of physical contact.
Right? And I hurt trying to float through walls though.
Just float in and out. Maybe pop up in a closet here and there.
Mm-hmm. You're onto something.
So the other thing that I think makes what you guys are doing with Jesus Island really unique is that you use your supporters in the story. You actually cast them as characters. And that's a really amazing idea. Was this kind of like a plot to appeal to people's egos to get more people to jump on board, or was there something more to that idea?
No, that's pretty much it.
People love to see themselves.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell. We needed a guerrilla marketing idea. I was thinking about how much fun it would be to be in a comic book, and if you're a fan, you know, how great it would be to be immortalized in a comic book. And we need to get this thing off the ground, get people interested. We Sean and I got together, we talked about it, and thought, well, all right, let's see how difficult this is going to be to pull off. And turns out it wasn't. It was, as long as people supplied the pictures, it was just a lot of fun Photoshop. But it really took off.
Yeah, that's a very clever and unique way to get your supportive fans up, rallying behind you there.
Yeah,
and when you have you have a book that's got basically so many extras, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just so many beings in it that you need a lot of faces anyway.
Yeah, we've had 47 characters so far that are modeled after fans, just in the first.
Oh, wow. Years. That's really cool.
Yeah, because we figured any character that can be modeled after a fan should be.
Yeah.
You know, there's no downside to doing it. And the other thing is it also kind of breaks you out of your preconceived notion about what a character should look like, or what sex they should be, or what size they should be, because the fans decide that when they buy the role.
Right.
Which I think is kind of cool too, because there have been interpretations of characters that have changed based on the person who bought it. And that's always, I think, a good change for the story.
Wow.
And then you always run into, especially if you do sequential artwork, you can run aground of drawing characters that look a little too similar over and over again, where you find that you're doing the same sort of eyes, the same sort of mouth. So this completely takes you away from that. Now every character is very different from one another. And I think that form, artistically, that helps you grow too. You get used to not staying within a process of delivering what is a safe piece of artwork.
I was actually going to ask how that has influenced your art, especially with, the whole idea that artists tend to draw what they know, and what they know best is themselves and the people around them.
Right.
Has that
expanded
your art?
Well, right, because I don't draw as many males with chiseled jawlines and perfect abs anymore. Now draw them with a little bit of love handles and a little bit of jawline. It's absolutely true. From when we started years ago, the artwork, I hate to look at it now, because you fast forward years after that, and from doing so many drawings and paintings over that time, that it's easy to see that there's a lot of growth, especially when they'll have the trade. They'll see issue one and they'll see issue four, and they're like, are these different artists? So,
Sierra, you're probably able to do that now at this point, right? Look back at some of your old work and
old design work.
Yeah, like, yeah,
it's garbage.
Writing's the same way.
Yeah.
Anything I wrote more than a few years ago, I hate now. I'm just like, oh.
So with that in mind, have you taken the actual traits of anybody who comes into this comic that you're drawing into the comic into the writing as well, or is that completely separate?
No. Oh, no. We want to incorporate as much of the person as we possibly can. In fact, the Vatican Black Ops, that the main crew of five that land on the island, are all modeled after local stunt people or actors I've worked with before. So that if we do a film version down the line, I have actors who already look just like the characters.
Well,
that's an awesome perk.
Yeah, so those ones I really modeled after. We kind of fine-tune the characters to fit the actors that we modeled them after, specifically so they'd be able to give us the portrayal that we needed. Because I will see a film version of this in a theater before I die, even if I have to make it myself.
I was written into a comic book once without my knowledge. Well, I didn't know until afterwards that I was included in a comic book, but it was an artist called Raza. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He did a new version of Moon Girl. And I started following his art, and I think they did some Kickstarter stuff too, and I supported it in the beginning. And then one day he sends me a page of, there's a scene where she's sitting in kind of like a detective room, and she's got all these wanted posters splayed out on a table in front of her. And in the wanted posters, they're really small, but he had drawn in like faces and names of actual people.
Aww.
And I was on one of the wanted posters. And I was like, that's so cool. I never thought of that before, but I totally supported everything after that because of that. Like, my face is in there. And now I have to love you forever because of that. So Thanks for trapping.
Yeah, how we do it.
Yeah, yeah, from a fan perspective, that's really special. Yeah. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, so I think that's a really amazing idea that you guys did that. And I don't know, I'm kind of surprised nobody has stolen that idea from me yet.
I know why it isn't, because it, tracking down and doing, you know, getting the photos from all the fans and then being able to do them consistently for that character is a pain in the butt. But I have processes that I utilize to try to take the headache out of matching the eyes, matching the noses when you change all these different angles. And that comes from years ago of just doing some animation and understanding how to map a face. Mm-hmm. So that if, you know, the eyes turn down at the edges, you know, I have my own grid that I'll set up. So recreating that from any angle, once, you know, I set up the main front-on view, isn't so difficult.
It sounds like you guys both bring a lot of varied skills and experience into this, between all of your film experience, acting, stunt work, animation. Like, that's a pretty big bucket of tools for you guys to bring to a comic book. That, yeah, I mean, maybe that helps with the whole kind of, it definitely looks like a mixed media sort of. Mm-hmm.
Well, that started out because we didn't have a colorist or an inker. and so, I mean, I wanted to just do pencils because those are faster. You don't have to, and I'm colorblind too, so it helps to be able to just be able to knock out the lines and the shadows and shapes and then let someone else pick up the ball and run with it. We didn't have that. So, because we're independent, so I had to learn very quickly how to paint on a Cintiq tablet, which I had never done before, because the only painting I had really done, you know, aside from little Illustrator flyers, is in real life. So I found that applying gesso to my computer screen was a bad idea quickly, and I just had to learn on the job.
I'm interested in Mortimer. Can you tell us about your kind of story character? I love the way that you guys have set up each of these. I love that you guys have set up each of these like comics with kind of a Crypt Keeper feeling, where you introduce the story at the beginning. Was Tales from the Crypt and that sort of setup an influence on that?
It did. And I did not want to do the tried and true type character. Bernie Wrightson did it with his creepy, Uncle Creepy. And then you had, of course, the Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt, and the Old Witch. So I needed to provide something different. And I thought, well, it'd be a lot of fun to combine two horrific ideas, and that is Archie Bunker and the Crypt Keeper.
Oh, I see it. I totally see it.
So I figured that would be a lot of fun. And over issues, it would just be Sean hating him. Of course, he's just one of those. Like, he's that bad uncle that always says the very wrong thing at the wrong time at the party, not sensitive culturally, and he's just a terrible creature. So we did that, and I decided that every issue going forward, it has to be Sean plotting to kill Morty, and I thought that was even more fun. So eventually he's going to succeed, but it won't end there.
So it won't matter.
Did your co-creators have something to do with your creation of their characters, or did you just kind of like make them be like, all right, this is what you guys are going to be?
Part of that was...
Was it a surprise?
It was a surprise for a lot of the others when I decided to draw them in a horrible way. kind of the freedom you get as the artist is you can kind of just put them in there and be like, well, too late. Mortimer, a lot of that is based off the editor too, our editor Sean Greenleaf. We are always joking around that apart from each, because we're best friends in real life too, that apart from each other, we're horrible people, but together we make a half-functioning human being. So, some of our conversations have...
I think that's how marriage works, right?
Right. Half of our drunken conversations from back in the day when he was my roommate have found their way into... Mortimer discussions, which are always grosser than gross, worse than worse. That's where you get in issue two, a room full of dead babies. In issue three, you have a bucket full of dead puppies. I mean, these are dark, funny, stupid, drunken conversations that he and I have had in the past.
Both things that weren't in the script, by the way.
No.
He just decided to add while drawing it.
Surprise!
a bucket of dead puppies. I just can't.
Well, I like to court the whole process close to deadline time, and so it's just too late to go back.
So there can't be that moment of, no, dude, you gotta take these dead puppies out of here. This isn't gonna work.
Carter thinks it's gonna be 6 weeks, and he's like, you son of a bitch. It's worked so far.
It's true. In fact, most of the conversations at the intro of the issues are actually taken from real things that we've said to each other.
Yeah.
The whole discussion about the dead puppies, which I think was the issue 3, issue 4 intro?
That was issue 3.
Yeah, we were arguing about that. That was almost verbatim.
Yeah, we were at a convention. He says, you did what? And I'm laughing, and people are trying to buy comics. I'm like, oh, are you guys going to have to wait a second? We're having a moment. And it just went on and on.
You couldn't just make a bucket of dead puppies. You had to have somebody like step on the bucket and fling it up into their face.
Oh, I had an elaborate four-page setup that was going to be like Carrie, where they were actually suspended from a tree, and it was the whole.
Oh my god!
And he was going to trip over it, and it's and he's like, dude, no.
I think this begs the natural next question to be, can you guys tell us about the angry letters that you must be receiving for this book? Please share some good stories with us of some of the feedback you've had on this, because I know that everybody does not love this book. Come on.
Well, unfortunately, the further we get in, the less hate mail we get.
Really?
But early on, when we first just like announced it and just put a cover out, some of the shit we got was amazing. I had someone tell me that they hoped I got cancer of the AIDS.
What?
For writing a comic book. That's amazing.
Cancer of the AIDS.
Doesn't that cancel each other out, though?
I would hope.
Seems like it would.
Maybe.
Like a combo platter of death.
You know, I've had a couple run-ins at conventions that I thought might turn physical that didn't. One really crazy guy who was just a lunatic and started ranting about the Jews and got really, really mad about our comic. We were working on a pitch for a video game at the time where the playable character was the Antichrist. And when I mentioned that, he just lost his shit and like stormed off. And I half thought he was going to come back with a gun. I mean, he was just nuts. So we attract some strange types.
That's true.
Yeah.
I recall reading some comments. I'm not sure if it was on your website somewhere, that was basically people who were criticizing your story not being truthful enough to the Bible or truthful enough to some of these religious names that you were using and some of the references that you were like, well, that's not really what happened. And this is what, and I'm just reading through these comments, like, these people are really, they're criticizing a book called Escape from Jesus Island.
Yeah.
It's not a doc, obviously, not a... yeah, it's obviously not meant to be accurate.
Not only
that, this is not the medium for you.
Not only that, they're criticizing it based on a book under the pretense of that's not what happened.
Yeah.
All right.
So you want to talk about what really happened? Okay. All right. Let's do this.
Who do you know that we know? Because that's amazing that you know someone that knew what happened.
I would say that it's a benefit probably that you guys put this out a few years ago, because today, I have a feeling if this book were coming out brand new today, you might get a bit more of a serious lashback.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a volatile climate in that regard.
Yeah, we're looking at that because
the natives are restless.
Well, we did get kicked off CNN.
You got kicked off,
really?
CNN?
Tell us about that, then.
Well, they booked me on there to go on their Sunday morning thing for the Faces of Faith segment, which I couldn't believe.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, my God, yes.
What idea was that?
Let's do that.
Oh, somebody didn't do the research. Oh, God.
Right. So they were going to – I don't know who they were going to put me on with. Probably, you know, someone who would try and ambush me, but I would just laugh, so whatever. And so I was psyched. And then the – the morning of, they canceled, bumped me back a week, but there was like a news story that had happened. So we took that. Okay, it's fine. And then the next Sunday, late Saturday night, the segment got transferred to a different producer, and she called me up pissed and said that she didn't book me and I was not going to be on. And yeah, I mean, she was, it got transferred to someone who just nixed it. So I got axed last minute twice, 2 weeks in a row, which was awful because it would have been really funny.
Did they not see a picture? Good video clip. They didn't like see a single picture of your face of faith.
Well, at the time, we had just put out our first issue as a Phantom variant, which was like a limited run of 3,000 that's just in like 100 stores. And we did a special cover for that that showed the Antichrist being crucified. And a bunch of the Phantom stores refused to carry us and left the Phantom program over it.
Wow.
So that got some news from the backlash from that. And I think that's how CNN originally picked it up until it eventually, you know, ended with a producer who just flipped out and said, yeah, we're not putting that in the air.
That's hilarious. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
But I almost made it. They almost made a terrible mistake.
I think you should send a free copy of your new trade paperback to our new vice president.
He would love it.
I think he would.
Yeah, he'll probably end up as a character at some point.
I hope so.
Yeah. Thank you. Might see a little bit of himself in one of these characters, maybe. So, I guess, you know, I want to hear, I think Jackie, well, we talked a little bit about Mortimer's process, right, for this art.
But one question I did have, one of the rewards for the Kickstarter is an art session with Uncle Morty. Mortimer, what will that focus on? Is it, are you going to focus on, like, character development, textures, backgrounds, line work, color?
It's going,
what you got going on?
It's basically the approach into comic books from the standpoint of the independent sort of comic artist publisher. So it would begin with the fundamentals of just storytelling, going panel to panel within the sort of sequential sequence, and then getting into the more nuts and bolts of perspective anatomy, and then at the tail end half of that, how to color digitally, and yes, render background and value.
That's a lot to cover.
I talk fast.
How long? That's fair. Well, that sounds like it'll be fun for a few lucky people there.
I really want to know, how did you guys come to receive that great testimonial from the Jesus of Horror, Clive Barker?
Yes.
Come on, guys. That's like the treasure, right?
Yeah, that blew our minds. We had sent, I think it was actually our editor, Sean Greenleaf, had posted something on Clive's page, just, you know, out of the blue. And Clive's assistant emailed me and asked us, we hadn't even put out the first issue at this point, and asked us to send him advanced pages. So we did 11x17 blow-ups of the first 20 pages of issue one and sent them off to him. And he, just couldn't have been nicer to us. Just super, super cool. He put out a post on Facebook and Twitter promoting us and gave us permission to use it as a blurb on the cover, which opened a ton of doors and blew our fucking minds. Because so cool. He's a hero of ours.
Yeah, ours too.
We actually just sent another package out to him about a week ago with the first four issues and kind of getting him caught up on everything we've done now that we've got like gaming miniatures and all kinds of other fun stuff.
That's a pretty great blurb to have for an indie comic team. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. In the Skype log, I'm going to post a link that we basically put that picture on his Facebook page, and that's what kicked that off. Part of the Make Me a Mutant image is that I knocked out just to run the guerrilla campaign, guerrilla marketing campaign that we have.
Well, I could see, you know, it almost is a little bit like, oh shoot, what is it? Like Nightbreed?
Yep,
kind of has that feeling of like dark underground clan of people, you know?
Yep.
Definitely.
So you guys have a bunch of other stuff going on. Sean, I know for sure you're working on You said that the video game for Escape from Jesus Island is kind of on pause for the moment.
Yeah, the all the mechanics are done for it. The design is done. We built a custom role-playing game system based on the comic, where you can create any mutant from the comic as a character. So we're at the point now where we need studio help to be able to move forward beyond here. But the in terms of transferring the comic to game mechanics, that part of it's done.
But what's the you're working on a comic book, or not a comic book, I'm sorry, you're working on a video game right now called Epic Tavern?
Yeah, that's with Hyperkinetic Studios. And they're a startup by a collection of game designers who've all done AAA games. A lot of the guys from like the Spider-Man series, Army of Two, Deus Ex, Call of Duty. So I mean, they've done a ton of stuff, and they've got together to make this new game that's kind of a resource management role-playing game, where it's modeled around, in classic role-playing games, there's always the tavern where you go to get your quests.
Mm-hmm.
In Epic Tavern, you own that place. You're the tavern keeper, and you put together a stable of a few dozen different adventurers that you can level up and form into different parties and configure different ways to send on multiple quests. So it's kind of part role-playing game and part resource management, and plays on a lot of the standard tropes of role-playing games. So I think it's really a game for gamers. People who've played a lot of role-playing games, I think, are going to like it a lot.
So what role-playing games have influenced you on this?
I mean, I grew up with the Baldur's Gate, all the classic. I mean, I've been playing role-playing games as long as they exist because I'm old. so I grew up on the Wizardry and that sort of thing. Epic Tavern is sort of a.
What's your favorite character? Are you the elf or the mage or?
In which?
Any of them.
Just in general.
Yeah. What's your favorite character to build in a role-playing game?
It depends. In any of the Bethesda stuff, I end up as an archer whether I want to or not. No matter how I start the game, I end up as an archer who casts a little.
Yeah, I was going to say probably a drunken Capote. That would be most like class.
So Epic Tavern, is it out yet, or is it coming out? Okay.
Right now, we're currently doing the quest design, and we're building up some of the characters that'll be in taverns that have individual quests assigned to them. And early access, I think we're probably still 5 or 6 weeks away from that. They launched through Kickstarter, so they have they do live broadcasts on Twitch, where sometimes they'll give out early access code. So I think there are a few players who have been kind of get into the pre-alpha to sort of test out the engine. But we're still a month and a half or so away from letting people in mass, I think.
Cool. What platform? Sorry, I'm kind of running away here.
Get out through Steam.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, and you can find it at epictaverngame.com.
What kind of challenges did you find unique to creating a video game versus creating the story for a comic book?
It's a whole different world. Well, I mean, you're writing in spreadsheets, which in and of itself is a whole new thing. In addition to using text strings, we're using command strings that'll, you know, pull the character's name based on who they happen to have in the party. It'll pull the weapon that character's carrying. It's just these kind of weird strings of commands, and so it's really sort of learning a whole new language. But it's been so much fun. It's a great group of people we're working with, and you know, building quests for a video game is just a dream job. That's something I've always wanted, and I'm just having crazy fun with it.
Can you give us a sneak preview of one of the quests?
What I'm working on right now is involves an orc barbarian who is a playable character, and as you get to know her better, you learn that she had 7 sisters, and her mother was received a blood curse that she would die at the hands of one of her daughters, and she's now killed off 5 of the 7 daughters.
Oh my gosh.
The playable character is one of the remaining ones, and her sister was taken away from her and hidden away as a child. So you get this quest to kind of go and find the other sister, and then either deal with the mother, you know, by killing her or by tracking down the shaman who originally put the curse on her and trying to get it lifted that way. So it's one that can play out a ton of different ways and end up with any combination of those as playable characters going forward.
It's very cool.
It sounds like a really awkward Thanksgiving Day dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, the quest is called Family Matters.
Solid.
Yeah.
What's your do you have a are you playing a role playing game now? Like, do you have one ongoing? Or is it just too much to handle while you're building?
I haven't been able to really play much of anything. Between the Kickstarter and a day job and the video game and the regular comic book work, I have no life whatsoever.
That is a lot.
You been playing anything, Morty?
Couple of things. I went ahead and re-downloaded the Skyrim Special Edition with all the stuff. So it was mainly for the wife, and I was like, here you go, this will keep you, you know, nice and occupied, and you know, you'll have a lot of fun with this, and awesome. And I sat down, and then like 4 hours later, making fucking iron daggers again. I can't quit you with Skyrim. So we started playing that again. The DLC for Dark Souls is kicking my ass. I haven't gotten much further than that. And then I had to stop with the fallout of the building of the settlement stuff, so not a whole lot aside from that. Covers most of what the video gaming aspect is, and for actual RPGs, I still run my weekly tabletop, you know, Savage Worlds game, which keeps me nice and
occupied. Nice. Very nice.
I've been really tempted by the new Skyrim, but I think it came close to causing a divorce the first time I played it, so I'm trying really hard not to go there again. The original Skyrim came out when I was pregnant, which was perfect timing, because, you know, I went out on pregnancy leave, and like I had 3 months or something at home, where I was just basically sitting all the time. So I played a lot of Skyrim during that time, but then it wasn't enough time to do it, so I had this really terrible thing where I was so obsessed with it that I would turn the TV on and just get it to like the opening menu before my husband came in from work so that he couldn't get on the TV. I would basically just, it's like pissing on the TV. Like, it's mine right now.
Like, stake your claim. You know?
And then
yeah.
Just keep it there while I do the other thing. So he got so tired of hearing that theme song play over and over and over and over again. Yeah, it's really
switch
cruel.
Controller.
So cruel. I love the idea of Epic Tavern, because I have this weird thing sometimes with games like that where I'll imagine like what happens in like what is happening in that world after your character leaves someplace, you know, like that kind of idea of like, does life go on when I'm not there? And I've thought about that. I've been playing The Witcher 3 a lot, and I think about that in the tavern. You know, you go in and you kind of like get into a fight with a bunch of ruffians in the bar, and then you just leave and take all their shit and go. And then I think, you know, I wonder like what the tavern owner witnesses. Yeah, these like wizards and like, you know, all kinds of weird people coming into this bar all the time. And sometimes there's guys like sitting in the corner telling stories about like their crew that was murdered in the forest or something.
Did they ban weapons at the tavern after that? Like, or do they sit around talking about that one asshole who kicked all their asses and took their stuff?
Epic tavern, how about epic lawsuit?
You're a witcher. Nobody's going to tell you you can't have your weapons. But I remember, like, there's one where you walk into a tavern and there's a couple of guys there that work for a baron, and they kind of start, like, bullying you. And you make them, you know, at that, it's really hard to not get into a fight in those games, because it's like your choice is either to turn around and run or just say whatever kind of asshole option they give you to say back to them. So you're never going to run. You know, you get in a fight with these soldiers inside of the tavern and you beat them pretty easily. But then as soon as you walk out the door, you realize that the town is full of these people that work with them, these soldiers, and they all just start kind of running after you like, that's the guy that beat up our friends. And you just instantly made an enemy out of a baron just by accidentally getting to a bar fight. But no, I think it's a cool idea, like what happens in the tavern, you know, outside of the idea of like centering the game around a tavern.
Yeah,
it's
definitely a game for gamers.
Definitely.
Yeah, and they've set up a system that's really kind of a sandbox for writers, where we can go in and design an entire quest from scratch. Where it's not that we have designers telling us what to write and we're just knocking out the fields, but we get to actually do design work and build, you know, entire intricate quest chains on our own, which is, you know, just awesome. And we've got a cool crew of writers, and now we're starting to sort of overlap each other's. And early on, we're sort of writing in bubbles, We'd each kind of have, you know, I was writing on an orc storyline, somebody else was working on the mage college, somebody else is doing dwarves. And now we're starting to use each other's NPCs and the characters we've created and overflowing some of the storylines, which is where it's really starting to get fun as the lore of the story world is starting to come together.
Can you tell me about, either on Escape from Jesus Island or in working with Epic Tavern, do you have any fun stories of kind of like moments that you screwed up, moments that you did something wrong, or that you...
Oh, I can think of one day to night. Day to night, Sean.
Which one?
That you have the, what was it, the shortest story? What was it? The all eight issues are supposed to take place in one night, and then you had wrote, and they come out and they see the sun and blah, blah, blah. Go ahead and tell them that story.
That's a good story. This is the time that Morty almost killed me.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I made the mistake of using the word daylight when referring to the light coming from the water. It's still night. So he did this entire scene
with daylight.
Yeah. So.
Oh God.
No. Let's not downplay what happened. They swam through the water. They emerge from a cave, and it's fucking daylight. And they're walking outside, and there's birds singing, and it is bright. And they're like, "Doo doo doo, everything's great. We're gonna make it." And it's on the beach because you know beach sand looks totally the same during the day like it does at night, and all the shadows totally the same. And all you have to do is add blue. No, Sean.
No, Sean.
No,
that's Sean. Oh.
Yeah, that was not my best work.
Just one word.
That one little word. Just fucked it all up.
Yep.
Well, I am an idiot, so you have to spell it out a little bit more.
Are there like meetings where you guys decide just how much blood is too much blood in this book, or...
Is that even a thing?
Or Morty just does it, and then, like, there's been that one time, like, with the puppies hanging from the trees where, you know, occasionally Sean just has to go, no.
No, our debates are, no, you hit this guy, you know, we can't have this many pokes of the eyeball, and then I'll yell at him, like, you have smashed a person's hand in every single comic book. And I'm like, well, there needs to be, you know, the backbreaker or suplex or something, because we need to do something other than eye poking and hand smashing. That's really what we debate is how to kill people.
It's true.
You do like to do the whole like spear through the face thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like that.
Various pokey things through the face.
Because in my brain, because sometimes I get a little out of it when I'm making artwork, it is 3D to me.
Well, if you guys ever need a group of supernatural beings, might we suggest a trio of sirens that talk way too much?
I like it.
I think it's a good idea.
I think we've covered all of our questions. Sean, Morty, do you guys have anything else that you want to tell everybody about the project or about the Kickstarter before we go?
Definitely Kickstarter. Go for it, pitch man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Kickstarter runs through the end of November, and some of the stuff we have available are more roles as characters in the story. You can be Vatican Black Ops agents or even one of the Antichrists. 12 mutant apostles, and we even have a featured apostle reward that comes with a metal gaming miniature of your character.
Oh, nice.
So we have all kinds of cool stuff. We're working with an effects shop called the Shoggoth Assembly to build fleshbound Bibles, which are a replica from something the Antichrist will be using later in the comic. And these are made from super realistic and creepy silicone flesh that he stitches together with assorted body parts. So everyone's so cool.
That's awesome.
And they're horrible.
Are they actually Bibles?
Yeah. It's a real functioning Bible that's just bound in this skin. Well, Morty, you've touched those masks, the Shoggoth masks. The skin is awful.
Oh,
it's
really
disturbing.
If you take real human flesh, you put it in the refrigerator for about 2 hours, take it out, and then just kind of like stretch it. Not that I would ever have done that, but I'm it would feel a lot like that. I'm just saying.
You just know somebody who did it, right?
I know about
it. Yeah. Very imaginative.
I had a roommate in college with a weird fetish. I'm just saying.
I forgot there was one thing that I had wanted to ask about the artwork. Morty, in the Kickstarter, you've got lined out here several changes that you're making in the trade.
Yes.
From what was originally printed. Can you kind of tell me like why you made those choices or what kind of brought that on?
As we're going through some of these, and a lot of it was sort of sophomore sort of mistakes on my part, a lot of it's storytelling problems. There's a certain left to right that needs to be read in a comic and any story that I'm sure you guys know, that it can throw you off really quickly if the left to right gets off. Mm-hmm. Suddenly you're looking out page when you should be looking in page. So I've corrected some of those. You can't just flip the panel. All of a sudden, all the signs are, you know, backwards. Or no, a lot of it has to get repainted. Some of it was just not very, very good paint. It just wasn't there. You know, either I was not really thinking, or again, a little bit of colorblind issue kicked in that, you know, after the fact you look at it and you're like, oh, I could have done way better with that. So there was a lot of fixing with that. The first two comics were really dark in actual color saturation, and they printed dark. So I had to go and lighten it. And again, this is something you learn after the fact. You go, oh, crap, the printer prints everything at 20% darker than what I have on my LED backlit screen. So imagine that. So, yeah, it's a lot of corrections. And then there's Sean had some corrections he wanted to make. We also had a wall of silence that is all of our fans, their names are scrawled into this wall as victims of the comic. Well, that was a really small panel in the first comic book. And I don't think that did our fans justice for what, you know, they've backed us for so long and been vocal supporters. So I decided that needed to be much larger on a page, you know, half a page minimum. And then that pushes everything to the next page, and well, guess what? All your math is fucked up. So I had to go and correct a lot of that too. So, but it was worth it because I'm happier with the final product.
Yeah, just looking at the difference in sort of the panel layout from some of the old to new stuff is, it definitely looks sort of more organized and clean and.
Yeah, the eye pathing is better.
Yep.
Yeah.
And my panel layout in general was conservative. I didn't do any like panel bridging. I didn't do a lot of weird panels just because part of the old mindset of sort of my generation, like prior to the 90s explosion in comics, was you did very little panel bridging, you know, with a character kind of coming out of the panel because it created visual confusion. You want to be able to sell it within the panel. That's the most important thing. Well, that doesn't really carry over these days. It makes it kind of a boring comic. Trends are what they are. You shouldn't go overboard, but I could have pushed it a little bit more and made it more creative.
Yeah, there's a lot of, double spreads going on and stuff like that today, like big sprawling across the book scenes.
Well, yeah, we've gotten into now 3 or 4 panels a page, which I think it's prettier, but at 22 pages. I'm not sure that the fans are getting as much story at this point. I don't know about that.
I think too, it's tough. A lot more people read digitally now. I go back and forth between digital and print, and it's so hard to read comic books digitally when you've got these big double page spreads because you can never get them to look right.
Right.
When it's split up, you just can't get the same effect of, you know, you've got to flip back and forth to see the whole thing. It's just like, doesn't translate well.
We don't do a lot of that. We did it in one that I know of, but for the most part, they do read fine. They don't really need to be stitched together because everything on the left is kind of, story-wise, is consolidated on the left with, you know, photo. It's like a photo montage and stuff. And then everything on the right is this man on a cross and tells more of the story. So you could still read them separately, but for the most part, I'm with you. Comixology has kind of changed, again, how comics should look, and you can't ignore that trend just for print.
So you guys have 10 days to go on this.
As we're recording this.
As we're recording this.
It's going to come out in a couple days, yeah.
I would definitely, I started reading this book, I don't know, probably I think around when issue number 2 was coming out. I think it was when I discovered it originally. I think everybody should be reading this because there's so much happening in this story that is completely unique and different that still a few years later, I still haven't seen anybody else doing it. So, you know, it's amazing. Unless you're a devout Christian and then you might not like it, but
it's the story of Revelation. You know, it's we patched it up.
All the horror really comes from the Antichrist, and really you don't want us to kind of downplay that. I mean, if you are a hardcore Christian, do you want him to be nice? You want him to be horrific, don't you? There's a sort of a moral story here that, you know, evil's not cool. And down dark paths, and oh, fuck that. He's pretty awesome, actually.
He's a little boy.
my favorite thing about him is I am really into that. Whatever this, like, power... power laser thing he has off the side of his face. I don't even know what to call it. It's like this glowing tattoo that sort of just explodes with like Antichrist power whenever he gets pissed off. I just love that thing so much.
What it is in the story, he's hit 3 times with, well, in the Bible, he's hit 3 times in the head with an axe, basically. So he has this wound, and when he's not pissed off, the wound is just this gnarly, ghastly, hardly healed wound over time, but it kind of splits open when he's angry, and part of his power is the fact that he can reshape reality to whatever he wants it to be, whatever, however he perceives it. So all these mutants on the island, they look a certain way because he heals them, stitches them together, but they get kind of polluted, twisted towards his idea of the world. So that is reality ripping apart. That's why you'll see faces in the mist and all. That's this idea spilling out into the world.
I think my only disappointment with this story is that I really thought the Inquisitor was a female. I don't know why. I just, yeah, The what?
Inquisition, the one with the big ball and chain?
Yeah. I thought that was a woman. And then at one point I read the panel, they referred to Inquisition as he. It's like, oh, damn
it. I remember thinking that too, actually. Yeah.
I can see that too, the wig and the plastic crown that he wears and the porcelain mask, because he's a burn victim, a horrible burn victim. And this is sort of costume stuff that he picked up off the, you know, out of the bin over at Regen during one of their holiday parties that he just dresses himself. So he's just Michael Myers terrifying.
They invite him to the holiday parties?
Not anymore.
No, not since that last time.
He's dangerous on the dance floor.
It's so rude.
So, is there anything else that you guys want to hit on? Did we?
Just that we have a promo running through the end of the campaign. We're on Facebook or Twitter, if you find us there. And you share or retweet any of our posts about the campaign. Every night, we're picking a different fan that Mortimer is going to transform into a mutant.
Ah, that's cool.
Well, I'll jump right on that after this recording.
Yes, we'll be picking a winner every day through the end of the campaign for that. Yeah. And the first one's already posted on our Facebook page right now that we selected from today.
Very cool.
Yeah.
There's no shortage of ego in the Sirens. We should be involved in this project.
Technically speaking, all each shared for the next 3 days, it would guarantee some victories in there. I'm just saying. It's
true.
Just throwing that out there, you know. Go ahead and take it up.
Is your what's your handle on Twitter? Is it just Escape from Jesus Island or
Jesus_Island?
There you go. And then on Facebook, they can find Escape from Jesus Island.
I guess there.
Do you guys have any personal social media that you want to share? Or?
Yep, I have a Morty Glum on Twitter, and I'm also on Facebook, just under Mortimer Glum.
I just did everything through the fan page, so.
Right, you on. Are Jesus Island.
For better or worse.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having
this
us.
This was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was super fun. I hope you enjoyed yourselves. And hey, good luck. We're going to keep, you know, keep pushing for you and hope that you guys get that Kickstarter through. Because I'm a backer and I want my book.
So. Yeah, I'm already backing myself.
Awesome.
Let's get thank that you. Project done.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sirens of Scream is a member of the Mega Nerd Media family. Visit meganerdmedia.com for geek-related columns, reviews, interviews, and videos. You can reach us via email at sos@meganerdmedia.com and on Twitter at Sirens of Scream. You can check us out on Tumblr as well. Please rate and review our show on iTunes and always send your comments and questions our way so we can discuss them on air. Jackie, where can people find you online?
I am Jackie the Robot on Twitter and Instagram.
And Sierra?
I'm at Sierra Houck on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr.
And you can find me at Lissa Punch on Instagram and Twitter. And our next show is...
No idea. Oh, yeah. It's a surprise.
But whatever it is, it'll be amazing. So come back next time. And thank you again to Sean French and Mortimer Glum from Escape
from the
Silence. Thanks for hanging with us, guys. Have a great night.
You too. Take care.
See you.
Bye.